board meeting for October 12th, 2020. Testing sound.
Oh, we gotta wait for that first. Yep. I call this meeting to order. Today is Monday, October 12th, 2020. This is the business meeting of the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors. Can we get roll call, please?
Time?
Oh, I'm sorry. It is 6:01 p.m. Roll call, please.
Director Benkendorf, present. Director Frumbiller?
Present.
Director Gutenberg, absent. Director Hines?
Present.
Director Karcher?
Here.
Okay, would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. First up, we have an education showcase with Singing Hills Elementary.
Yeah. Hello.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Regina. Thank you for coming.
I'm going to sit so I don't have to stand. That's okay. If you can't hear me, let me know and I'll take this off. But
okay.
If you're good.
You might need to speak up because we're live streaming. And
okay.
Or do that.
Good.
Okay. So just some things to share. We've been in, what, about 7 weeks, what are we?
We're in our eighth week.
Eighth week. So some things to share, not a lot, but some things just kind of talking about how we've been doing so far. So just our staff, our school community, they're doing such a good job with the changes that have been done and changes we've had to make and to acclimate to our new situation of coming back. And we're thrilled to have the kids back. Our parents, we're getting great feedback that they're happy to be back. Our kids are so happy to be back in. And yeah, lots of smiling faces going on at school this year. So we started out with some assessment days, and we made some little modifications. In the past, our assessment days, parents would bring the kids into the school, and we would have assessments based on last name for 5 sessions. This year, we spoke with Dwayne Smith and asked him, you know, could we do something different? We want to get our parents in, but we couldn't get them all at once on a back-to-school night. So what he agreed to was, and after visiting our school and talking about what we're doing, is on assessment days, all the teachers at each of the 5 sessions met their families, and there was no more than probably 5 or 6 at a time at the most. They met them outside with their signs like we normally would on the first day of school, and brought them in and did about a 15-minute back-to-school session of, this is what's going on in our classroom, this is who I am. We have a few new teachers this year, and it worked out well. So it was really nice. It was important for our school and our staff, for our parents to get in the classroom to see their classrooms were going to be safe, that we're spacing the desks, what it's going to look like, because it wasn't unknown. And we were getting a lot of questions. So I think it really felt good to our parents to actually walk in and see what was going on. The first day of school, we did have our preschool, kindergarten, first and second grade teachers meet the kids outside on the first day. And that's the second picture down there. Our third, fourth, and fifth went straight to the classroom. They were pretty used to going where they needed to go, but we thought it was important for our little ones to go ahead and meet their teachers as normal. And then another change modification that we made for preschool sign-in and sign-out during pickup and drop-off, they have to sign the children in and out, but we're trying to limit the visitors into our school, so we have an outside table, and so we have it structured pretty well. We had a suggestion from a parent of how we can make it better, which we appreciate, looking at it from their point of view, and so made some changes, and so that's what happens in the morning by the preschool door. We have a table set out with all 4 classrooms. Parents sign in. There's a teacher out there, grabs their kids, brings them in. It seems to work pretty well. Some new things this year. We're following protocols, and so you'll see staff with their masks, and you'll see quite a few children, preschool all the way up to 5th grade, with their masks going through. We modified some of the schedules, so I put up there our special schedule is the first one, our lunch schedule is the second one. What you're going to notice between times there is about 10 minutes, which is allowing time to get cleaned up in specials. so any disinfecting that needs to happen between classes, and then also in the lunchroom to make sure there's enough time for those kids to get back in, everything's cleaned and ready to go. We modified classroom environments, which I'll show you in just a few minutes, meaning you're not going to see desks right next to each other. And then I just want to share our new playground, our preschool playground over there. And so Trish Ackerman did a great job. She's our kids club coordinator, and she got on it and she ordered. We said, this is how much money we have. She looked to see what we could do and how we could utilize it, and our maintenance group led by Lloyd Nelson, amazing. They got that up and running, and we have to have a license before kids could get on it. And a week before school start, licensing came out, and this is the first time we've ever had zero. There's zero issues. It was perfect. We were like, yay! So Trish called up Lloyd and said, you know, thank you for everything, because it was perfect. We got no dings, as we call them, that we get sometimes from licensing. So it looks great. And if you saw our old one kind of had a slant to it. So this is great. And it's all fenced in. Kids are safe. Lots of playground areas. So we have a little shaded area with picnic tables. A little Jeep over there in the corner. The kids have a blast in there. So it's a beautiful new playground we have for our kids. So some classroom setup and some cohort groups. I just want to share some pictures of classrooms. So there you see a couple of setups. This is a kindergarten classroom. And so she has five seated there. Now they're little ones, and so they are about 3 feet apart. And then you see some alternate seating over there. So some kids can sit on the ground. You see some little bouncy balls they can sit in. That they just started this within this past couple of weeks. We had to get some classroom management in order first so we could teach them how to use these new seats, and they're doing a great job with that. And then this is the top one is an older classroom. It's a fourth grade classroom. Then at the bottom we have a first grade classroom of how she has it set. You see the dots there on her carpet of where children can sit down. So we're trying to keep them spaced even when they're on the carpet. So when we set up our classrooms, it's based on, of course, our distancing that we are working hard to adhere to, the number of students we have on the classroom. So our largest class has 22 kids. The room size, because it depends on how big the room is and the makeup of the room. We're pretty good about square rectangles. We don't have any crazy angles in there. And the necessary items that we need. We do need bookshelves. We need shelves to put manipulatives on. So we do need certain things in the classroom. So depending on the different needs. Then a little bit with our lunches, I want to share the playground. So we have our playground set up when we're talking cohort areas in three different areas. So this is, let's see, I believe this is playground A. So this playground right here and into this grassy area. And this is B over here. You can't see the whole playground, but it extends over here. And then C is the field. And so the children, depending on their class, so if I were looking at first grade, Mrs. Corey's class might be here during lunch recess, and Miss Letterhouse might be on the field, and Miss Garkey might be over here, and then when they have their pause recess, depending on how the teacher has it, they would be on a different area. So they get a chance to see different areas of the playgrounds, but we're doing our best to keep class cohorts together. So right now the kids are not mixing on the playground, even at grade level. And then this is our lunchroom here, and so here's one area. We have two tables per class. This is the second area, and this is the third area. These are kindergarten. We try our best to ask them to seat two to three at a side. It's really hard. We're working on it. Our kindies love, they're social. So some learning in the classroom, just wanted to share kind of what's going on. And so here's reading. It's they're working on their computers in a reading classroom, so third grade. Some writing, so first grade classroom. STEM class, a couple of pictures, and these are my first graders. And I want to share this because our two little guys, they wear their masks every single day at that's apparent. They want them wearing their masks, and they do. They wear them every day. We have one of them, a sibling, who has some health issues, and so they're very careful. And then the other thing I want you to notice of how the tables are separated by tape, so we try to keep the kids distance so they're not pushing the chairs together. They were doing coding on paper, so one person was the coding, and the other person was the robot. So that's what they're getting ready for before they actually get their iPads and start. This was a math class. This is in fifth grade. And so working together, they're able to sit there and talk. They are in a pod of three. You see the wipes there, disinfecting. And then in art class, once again, you see the tape separating the kiddos on the tables. And then the kids all bring their own art supplies when they go to art. So they have their little containers so that we're not mixing up supplies in the art room. Some learning outside. So this was a second grade class. They were doing a Westward unit, and their culminating activity was having lunch outside. So you see some pioneers out there, and an Indian out there, and Native American, and she's they're all sitting there eating. You see some cowboys, and they're sitting there, but they're sharing their information, what they wrote about with Westward expansion. And this is two first grade classrooms. This was all three second grade, and these are two first grade classrooms over here. They were doing a science experiment where you drop, I want to say it's alpha seltzer with water, and watch it pop up, and they're talking about how the oxygen builds up. So that's what they were doing outside. And some activities we have going on as far as after school. Right now we have ambassadors and Lego leagues about to start. So here's our ambassadors, and so they've started their meetings, and they sit in the library, and it's by class, and so by grade and by class, and so they're trying to cohort that way. And then they did take a picture, and when I was sharing with Miss Pam that I was putting this picture, she goes, please explain that we only had our masks off, only for the picture. We all had our masks on, but we just took it off. We did the picture real quick. And I think the school board will be okay and completely understanding that. So they just took their masks just to take a quick picture, and they did put them right back on. Our Lego League is going to be starting next week with our fifth graders. They were fourth graders last year, so Susan is extending that. And she had received a grant from Boeing. Dave Eddy had emailed us and let us know that she received a grant for her first Lego League Junior, in which she'll be starting that one in the spring. We're hoping to start art in the spring and choir in the spring. We're just kind of waiting to see how this works. So, yeah, everyone's doing a great job, and I'm just so proud of our school. They're I'm an amazing staff. I really do. Can't be more proud of them. So, any questions?
Do you have any comments?
No, I would like to say I went on a tour while the school was last Tuesday, and the energy that you had with showing me around was fantastic, and I loved it, and I appreciate you taking it, because I don't believe you knew that I was coming and with Douglas, and it was just so be prepared. But it was amazing to see, and because Lily went there, and it was I knew that school so well because I was there so often. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome. I mean, seeing everything in the preschoolers and the little cots, I mean, it was just, it was, I want to come back and teach there.
You're welcome.
Or be a volunteer there. I'll be the, you know, whatever. But it was fantastic, and the tour was awesome. The playground for the preschool was so neat. Oh my gosh, it was so, the way it was set up, I was just, everything was just perfect. So I applaud you greatly. It was just, it was a great tour and everything, so thank you.
Thank you for all your hard work.
Yeah.
It's my staff.
It's been a challenge.
They're great. They've been so wonderful through all of this. And
well, they think you're great too. So
you're so sweet. Heard that through the grapevine.
Yeah,
right?
I just heard it through the grapevine.
Yeah.
Well, then I'd just add that I was there on Friday morning, right? Was that Friday? It seems like a year ago.
Yeah.
I went into all of the classes, and it was, we poked our head into a few, but I went into all of them. And the instruction, and because it was first thing in the morning, when we were there, it was a little bit later in the day. So they were doing a lot of, they'd gotten past their morning meeting, I think, and they were doing direct instruction. It was math, it was literacy, phonics. It, it was amazing to see the energy of the teachers, their talent at teaching what they were teaching, the engagement by the students, and just the responsiveness between the students and the teachers and what they were doing. It was just a phenomenal kind of window into how high quality all of the teachers are and how sweet the kids are. You know, we saw it, there's like a guest, and they're like, hi. They wave at you, they smile, so they don't know who you are. And some of the classrooms have a protocol that if you're a visitor, they introduce you to the class. And so it's, you know, I welcome you guys to come and visit and see for yourself. Because the work that, as Regina is saying, the work that the teachers do every day with the kids and how responsive the kids are is just inspiring. It's just phenomenal. And Regina's leadership of that school for so many years and just operates so smoothly, like Kim was saying. Just everything was perfect. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been good. I'm so glad we're a person, so thank you for doing that. It's great for our kids.
Thank you. Very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Are you going to keep doing that?
Yeah, I'll keep doing that.
Okay. So, moving on. We get a motion to approve the agenda. Thank you, Regina.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
You.
Second.
Oh, I know. Is there a discussion?
No.
Roll call, please.
Director Benkendorf, yes. Director Frumviller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg, absent. Do I have to keep saying his name on ugly?
No.
Since I said absent up front.
If you say no.
Okay. Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Moving on to communications. We have our HR update with Ken Schumann.
Don't we have to do the approval
of
minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. I checked it off ahead of time. Hold on, Kim. I'm getting ahead of myself. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes?
So
it's been a long week. Discussion.
Can you give your time? Those are some of the...
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's what happens when I check it off before it gets
good. I thought I missed something.
Director Benkendorf, yes.
Roll call, please, yeah.
Director Frumviller?
Yes.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Now we go to communications.
All right.
Thank you for
coming. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
So I was on vacation for a little bit in between board meetings, so I've only been here for a few days.
Did you have a good vacation?
I had a great one. My wife and I went to New England.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
To Vermont.
And leaves changing
New Hampshire and Maine, and the leaves were unbelievable.
Wow.
Nice.
Especially in Vermont.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
The first week of October is the best time to go?
We left the 28th of September and came back 1 week later.
Wow.
And
that's awesome.
It was spectacular. And we'd been up to Rhode Island and Massachusetts in the fall. It was beautiful, but nothing like this.
Wow. We've never done that.
Colors, that's amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's
so
awesome.
It was great. Good. So I don't have a lot to report other than my vacation.
Yeah,
exciting.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll bring them next week.
There you go.
I've got about 3,000 of them. I love it.
Nice. I can report though that I think of all of our employees, Ken is probably sets the bar in terms of happy to be back at work.
Yes, I like coming back.
Oh. Yes. Look at that enthusiasm. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. So I only have a couple of items. You know, on your consent calendar, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the item on substitute pay. I know you've read probably the memo that I sent, but just for the public and that type of thing also is that, it is tough right now with substitutes because of COVID. We do have a number of substitutes who have remained on our list but have decided not to work, so they're not available because of COVID. And then coupled with that, we have some of our neighboring districts to the west who have increased significantly what they're paying to their substitutes. So again, our recommendation to you is that we make some significant changes through the end of this year, we can reevaluate it at that point and maybe come back to you. And either way, we'll let you know if we're going to ask you to continue it or if we're going to end it at the end of the year. And you know what the numbers are. We're adding $100 per day to each category of substitute, essentially. And that's, at least that's what we're recommending. And then we're also recommending to you, because our teachers, our existing teachers, do substitute for their colleagues once in a while. We pay them $20 an hour for that, and we're requesting that we double that to $40 per hour. So that'll be before you on consent calendar.
Now, are the neighbors to the west also just doing it through December?
Yes, okay. At least.
So we're kind of following along.
Yeah, it's pretty typical. I don't know if all three of them are, but I know that probably at least a couple of them, you know, they're reevaluating. I don't know if you know more about Littleton.
I know that Littleton, Cherry Creek, and Douglas County have all moved theirs to $200 an hour for the base substitute rate.
Yeah, we have a day.
Per day,
per
like
day.
Hour.
Yeah.
Pretty good hourly.
Yeah, I'm like, we're really on a the $20 to $40 per hour.
Yes,
hour.
Yes.
Because I know that some of them have increased that as well. And that's actually been, we've had more teachers substituting because we can't get the outside subs than usual, and they're
yeah.
It's beginning to be draining on them to do so much because it's their plan period when they do that. It's more at the secondary level. I think it does happen at the elementary level.
Yes, it does.
I don't know how that works, but anyway. I don't know that there's a time limit for it, but this gives us a limited exposure financially and the ability to evaluate it, how expensive it was, whether there's a need for it, and so forth.
We do
and
have
follow their lead. If they back off, maybe we back off.
We do have substitutes that teach in multiple that substitute in multiple school districts.
Right.
So a number of our substitutes, they do go to Douglas County, they do go to Cherry Creek, which are two of the districts, and we need to try to compete with that.
Yeah.
And so we want to keep ours here as much as possible.
Okay.
And then I don't know how much you know at this point about our Homegrown Talent Initiative project manager or part-time position that we've recruited for. We do have a candidate that has been interviewed, and it's looking really good. I think it's actually been agreed that the person would come here. We're just working out some details right now. Her name is Kristen Harris. She has a bachelor's degree in marketing and has had a number of marketing positions that I think would lend themselves quite well to this position. And not but being here, I wasn't involved in any interviews or anything, but Douglas was, and I was going to ask him if he could just speak a little bit about her and what your impression is.
Yeah, she's she did a lot of research about the Homegrown Talent Initiative prior to her first interview and came in incredibly enthusiastic about the opportunity, in part because she really believes in it for kids. And so she was, in the interview, really conveying to us how essential she thought this project was for the students. And so we believe she's going to be a great spokesperson for the project, because part of the role of the project manager is to engage others. It's not necessarily to promote the project, but as a project manager interacting with community colleges, businesses, other partners, even within the district, parents, etc., teachers, really believing in it and seeing the value is really important. And so that part was really more than we would have expected from someone. So, and she's very articulate about the issue. She's had experience both in what I would call, she's had corporate clients, and she's also worked in the kind of nonprofit foundation world, so she has a fundraising kind of experience as well. But can deal with logistics, highly complicated logistical challenges, corporate needs, and really gets the educational value. So it's just the perfect match. So we're excited to have her join
part-time?
Us.
Part-time?
Yes.
Yes, right. It's a part-time position.
So what? You know, is that something we need full-time?
We anticipate that with time it will grow.
I think over time that could happen.
Do you have an opportunity to leverage her expertise for the open? Isn't there an open marketing position or communications?
Communications.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
She's going to be in district. Anyway, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
We're still discussing, I think, the final.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we're still working out some.
Got it. Okay.
Good question.
Any other questions?
Is there any preparation going on? Because I know there's a big shortage around the state for paras as well. And when you are a para, it doesn't take a whole heck of a lot to get your substitute teaching license. Mm-hmm. When you're a para, they're vital to the makeup of our schools. What's to have them say, I'm just going to go substitute teach if they're getting paid that much?
Yeah,
versus...
That's a possibility.
Okay.
That's a possibility. The only thing is, as a substitute, they won't get benefits. As a
right.
parent, they get benefits.
Correct.
So there's an
Correct.
Incentive for them to stay.
So there is that,
but
right.
That could be an issue, and we'll have to
okay.
keep our eyes on that and see how that all
That was my only concern when I saw that pay increase. I was like, oh,
yeah.
it was close,
right.
para to sub pay, but now we just doubled sub, or if we're going to double sub pay,
yeah.
that's doubling a para sub pay as well.
I'm thinking that the benefits that they get as paras will carry the day.
Okay.
We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see how
there's also
is that about 20% is the
no,
benefit?
More.
No, it's
more
than that. You want to give a number, a general percentage on benefits?
Well, if you exclude the insurance, because that's a fixed cost, you just take into account the para, the Medicare, and the unemployment, I think it's
22.65%.
Be a little bit more specific.
And that doesn't include
go out four more
medical
decimals.
Benefits. That
yeah,
because
the para is a full-time para will receive medical benefits.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My point is,
too.
With the
right.
variable cost, it's 22.65.
Sure.
With the insurance costs, it's going to be significantly more based on their salary on a percentage basis.
Got it.
Okay.
So, but it's about $6,000 a year. Per person,
the health benefits,
yeah,
and then the consistency of income is also important.
Correct.
Versus the unpredictability of the
yep.
system.
Yep.
Okay.
Great.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. That's a good trip.
Yeah.
Oh, me too. Thanks.
Okay. Next up, we'll do a technology update. I'm going to check it off. Marty Silva. So I don't call you up again.
Right. I have results of our tech survey to share with you. Usually, I've shared that with you in the past in one of the first two board meetings. We've had other things going on, so I take this opportunity to share now. There it is. So we did a tech survey this year. Obviously, it's a little bit different because in May, we were right in the midst of remote learning. And so we changed up. We kept most of our questions the same, took some out, because I wanted to ask some questions specifically about remote learning, mostly like, do we provide you enough support, et cetera. So there's been some changes in terms of what I've asked this year, but some of the other years that historically I've been asking so that we can keep a kind of running tab of what it looked like on my baseline when I first came here in 2014, September is when we did the very, very first survey to then every May to see how our numbers are going. So these are the questions we asked this year. We asked 26 questions. We asked instruction assessment before remote learning, so I wanted to make sure that, hey, when you answer this question, answer it based on where you were at before we started having to do your asynchronous remote learning. We asked every year, we asked about professional practice, like how to use technology and your productivity, and where do you think you are in terms of your skill set. We asked about technology conditions. This year I asked about before remote learning, so I wanted to differentiate about what was our level of service before remote learning. The same questions that I asked every year, is the machine that we give you adequate? Is the machine that the students use adequate? Is there enough machines, et cetera? And then I asked a couple of questions of, during remote learning, do we provide enough support? And I'll share some of those answers with you. This is the responses from the very first one that we did to one last year and to one this year. I was surprised of 132, I thought I'd get less because this was all remote. Usually when we do our survey, I distribute it through my ETIC, my tech committee, and then they do it usually during a Thursday morning PLC. Mm. They have everybody come into the meeting with their laptops and they essentially make them take the survey, so we get really high. And so this year, it was just all through email. And so when I've done the email surveys in the past, I would get under 100, like around 90 or so. So I was surprised to actually get 132 this time around, 103 of which were teachers. And then I just picked out a couple of the items there that I share with you every year. The first one is ranked effectiveness technology use with your instruction. Essentially, do you think technology is necessary for you to teach a class? And so back in 2014, you know, there was the middle line is meaningful, but you don't see the rest of the wording there, but optional is what I say, essential and then not meaningful. And so back then, there were still some people who felt like technology was under, you know, not very meaningful for them. Now, last year, they answered, the trend is moving to the right every year as we've gone, more and more feel like, yes, it's essential to their instruction. And then this year, we're right around the same areas. I always think that that 1% or 9% down at the bottom, I would assume is probably like our PE teachers, or those types of teachers. This is our professional practice, and I just wanted to give you an idea of what our skill level, proficiency level is. Back in 2016 was when I first started asking this question, that's why it's not 2014. And so the goal is to get everybody in the yellow and light blue band, that we want to see that, because that means they're proficient and advanced. And then anything that's like green or blue means it's their beginning. So this is what it looked like when I first asked the question in 2016. This is what it looked like last year. As you can see, those yellow and light blue bands. And that's what drives our professional development every year to help expand those bands. This year I included, you see a lot more blues, I included some of the things that we use during remote learning. So like you'll see an item there for Zoom, you'll see an item there for Google Meet, which is kind of one of the items that we were using to do the video conferencing for home. So you see a lot more Nearpod. This item right here, that's the piece that we use kind of in our one-on-one environment. That's something new that we've implemented over the past year, so I figured that there'd be a lot of green and blue in that area. Moodle is another one that is another type of a learning management system like Moodle Classroom that like high school uses. And then I asked them, what would you like more training in? And what's interesting to note here is the fifth largest answer, which is none. Usually none is down at the bottom somewhere. So, you know, remote distance learning was something new that I put in this year. So obviously, I think a lot of people wanted more of that training. Nearpod is up there at the top, again, because it's a new piece of software. Google Classroom, we've all talked about Google Classroom and how integral it was to kind of help with our remote learning. Google Meet, which is the Google's version of Zoom. And then none was up there. And so, surprised to see that a percentage of our teachers said, nope, I don't need any more. Because I did include an other, I think. Didn't I? Oops. Maybe I didn't. But there was a place for them to add something if they wanted something. So if I didn't include anything in here, there was a comment section, which I didn't include here, so I'll have to look at that more closely. But it is still, it surprised me a little bit that none was up there, which is actually, you know, if we look at it, I think it's a good thing. These are technology conditions. One of the things that's, when I first came here, was kind of this, you know, the teachers couldn't depend on the computers that they had. So I wanted to make sure I asked those questions. So this is when I first came in here. Was their computer adequate, capable, or inadequate? You can see a lot of the bands were to the left. 2019, that's where we want to see the movement over to the right. They want to be able, you know, we want the teachers to be able to depend on their machines that we give them. And then last year, still kind of the same. I think this is kind of how it's going to look every year, because what's now that we're on this five-year refresh cycle, the teachers who have the 4 or 5-year-old computers are probably the ones that are answering in this lower band. And then once it's 5 years are up, then they're slated to get a new computer, and then they'll probably answer in the higher band. And as we move along in the 5 years, their answers will move to the left of this line. Now, we asked the question about, what do you think about the computers that your students use? And you can see back then, 2014, they really didn't think that the computers that the students were using were adequate. This is how we were last year, mostly in the adequate range. And then this is how we were, 2019, and this is this past school year. Couple more. I asked the question, starting in 2017, do you have enough computers? That's kind of what helped us drive our one-to-one initiative. This is how they answered back then. This is how they answered last year. This is how they answered this year. I'm assuming that when I ask this question again in May, it might be the last time I ask that question, that most of these answers will be over to the right, because essentially we've given every student grades 4 through 12 right now their own computer. And then I ask about whether or not they think the existing technology that they want to use for their students, if it's dependable, unreliable. This is how it was in 2014, last year, 2019, and this past school year. And then the other two questions I included in here was, I wanted to make sure that we provided enough support for our teachers during remote learning. So I asked that question, the amount of support. Like, how often were we always available to you? That's what that question was. And then the quality of service is like, did we resolve your issue? Were we knowledgeable in resolving your issue? So I wanted to make sure that even in the remote setting, that we were able to provide that work. And even as everybody was kind of working remotely, right, from their homes, we had the tools in place to be able to help our teachers remotely while they were teaching at home as well.
Can you go back to this?
Sure.
So the number of excellent at 40%.
That's pretty good.
And the lack, really, of anything to the left of good, and there's really nothing over there.
No.
So, I mean, that's phenomenal.
The testament I've touted the names before, but Mike and Seth and Sam and Brian and Shelley, to be able to help, willing to help from wherever they were at, working while they were working from home. And then the last three slides are, I take all of the technology conditions. All those questions are negative to positive. And so I aggregate all that data to see where we at in terms of overall technology. Do you have a negative view? Do we have a positive view? So this is how it was in 2014 when I first started working here. So negative is to the left, positive views are to the right. This is how it was last year. And then this is how it was just past year.
Right.
So always striving to move towards the right side of this. And I shared with you, this is kind of one of my tools to help keep myself and the department accountable. We look at this every year. We have discussions about what this looks like every year with my staff to see how we can improve. So some of these things are like things that never come out that we don't know about. So somebody will rate our internet 0. Oh, it's unreliable. And we're like, what? And then when you come to find out about it, it was like, oh, they always had an issue. They never put in a work order. They just kind of dealt with it. They're in a corner where maybe one of our Wi-Fi hotspots wasn't reaching them, or there was some interference or something like that. And so it's also a good tool for us to find some of those problem areas where maybe a teacher isn't vocal about, and they're just kind of dealing with it. And it doesn't come out until you have these surveys. That was it. Any questions for me?
No, that's pretty impressive.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you for the update.
I wonder on the none, that none, number 5. Mm-hmm. Was that, do you think people just, I don't know why.
He's here now.
Well, I know.
Yeah, I know. You would think that everybody would feel like they need to
train
to
something.
Yeah, learn exactly. Something, like anything, but...
Because it's still new and still, with what we're trying to do and be prepared for remote.
Well, and remember last year, we had 4 days of training for our, what we consider a pilot group of teachers for one-to-one, right? So they got really intensive training that we are not able to do this year because of our current situation. So I haven't drilled down to see those nuns, if they were any of those groups. I would guess to say that those that answered none probably include some of those teachers that did 4 days of the training.
Yeah.
I would guess to say that some of those nuns are part of our tech committee group.
Makes sense.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'd like to provide say thank you to Marty and your team. I mean, consistently you guys do a spectacular job. Carol's the only one who probably was aware before we had this position. And so just to take 1 minute to explain the history of Marty's position, we had a position in the district. It was only in place for a couple of years, called Director of Learning Services. Prior to that position, there were two positions, Chief Academic Officer and a TOSA, Teacher on Special Assignment, and then there was another Director of Curriculum Instruction. There had been kind of this shifting district level, one or two positions that were in charge of professional development, some of the multiple programs that we have, like ELL and Gifted and Talented. It's kind of an evolving collection of things, which in the recession, we just felt that it wasn't value added, that the schools were capable of much of that work. But what was missing, which is evidenced by some of these charts from 2014, was a new position that was a leadership position that was more strategic, that wasn't just, what's your title, Marty? Instructional.
Director of Instructional and
Informational Technology. We had the informational technology capability, but we really didn't have the instructional technology capability, nor the senior enough position to be strategic for the district on both of those things. And so we shifted the resources allocated to the Director of Learning Services, eliminated that position, and created this position because we thought that this would do a lot more for students and for staff. And then we were really fortunate enough to hire Marty, who had been in a district, five times our size, and who had a passion and was great with people, and kind of like Ken, comes to our district and it's like, this is like a sandbox for doing work that they love. So it continues. In part, the position was important, but Marty's, exceeded our expectations and his team in terms of what they're able to produce. But this is partly why you see those, because we weren't paying attention to this, and that's right where Marty and his team dug in.
Mm-hmm. Difference. Thank you.
Huge difference.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad I found this position open 2 weeks or 3 weeks before I moved out here.
We are super happy to have you.
Yeah.
I will say my daughter cracked open my computer and started doing some work, and she's like, this thing's too slow, I'm going to go get my Chromebook from downstairs. So she went and got the one you issued.
That's good.
So remember, you're bringing yours in?
Ninth grader.
What's that?
You're bringing yours in?
Yeah.
Marty, do you want to
keep it in?
He doesn't, he doesn't want it.
District sticker on it.
Yeah. He doesn't
see
want it.
Gets tuned up.
Could you just check this one out?
No, it'll get thrown in the trash, I'm pretty sure.
The ninth grader's got the brand new Chromebook.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I shared with you kind of our plan for the take-on. Every incoming ninth grade class will get a brand new Chromebook, and it'll be theirs for the 4 years. And after the 4 years, we'll repurpose them, however we want to use it. And that's why.
Yep.
She might not be saying that 4 years from now. So we'll see. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty.
Thanks, Marty.
Next up, we have Chief Financial Officer, Ron.
So, since I'll be following this upbeat
No, presentation. No, no.
There's not enough lipstick to put on this pig.
Oh, no.
So, starting with the checks over 5,000. There's payments, typical monthly expenses, such as utility bills, charter school flow-through, insurance premiums. And there are also payments for the athletic trainer services, lots of tech hardware, and licenses, sped facility costs, textbooks, desks, CASB dues, bus payment, increased bandwidth, sped contractors, and portable hand washing stations. Financial statements.
Ron?
Yes?
Can I ask a quick question? On the CASB, that's the dues, right? The annual dues right up at the top. Four at the top.
Okay. Yeah.
That's our annual dues.
Mm-hmm.
And was there any adjustment made due to COVID and us not being able to attend or them not having the conference?
I don't know.
That's a big chunk of change.
You would think
to
they
run
would,
that,
but
yeah.
It's my understanding that's run separately. So the conference fee, you pay a conference fee, and the 1,000 or so people that go pay a conference fee, which is, if you recall, multiple hundreds of dollars. So it is funded.
Okay.
So it's not paid for out of your dues.
Or it's in addition to
but
it.
But can they even be at the legislature lobbying? Come January.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that question.
I mean, that's what we're paying them for.
Well, whether they're at the legislature or whether they're lobbying through the way that everybody else is lobbying in a non-physical legislative session. I mean, the lobbyists don't go away.
True.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they find
other ways.
Like water and a crack. They find a way to do their job. You had another question though about you said something else was a lobbying and then
I just heard water.
Yeah. That was awesome.
There was something that had Jamie had sent it out, I want to say it was 3 meetings ago, and it listed out what the costs for the dues were and the individual conference or the legislative session was not part of that.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just curious when I saw that.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. It was a thought in regards to your question.
Maybe you read my mind.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, boy.
That's scary.
Oh, shoot.
That is scary.
Oh, shoot. I'm going blank.
That's a good one.
That was good. Oh, boy.
I chucked that water bottle.
It's a special day, and I appreciate
I probably deserve that for harassing you about how long you talk, and I will do that.
But as you guys discussed, when Jamie was here and continuing the membership with CASB, that one of the important aspects was policy work.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they CASB employs a number of lawyers. If you look at their employee list, the biggest concentration is lawyers, and that's not really for lobbying. That's for policy work.
Right.
Right.
And so they invest a lot of resources in that.
That's exactly what it was, too. It was dues and then policy management. Those were the two
right.
parts.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Is that
on,
what you were thinking?
No, but that's okay. That's why your mind didn't go blank.
Yes, it did.
Ron, I see two phone charges on here. One's at $6,000, one's at $5,900.
Okay.
And change. Does that normally happen in a one-month span that we get billed twice for phone?
Yeah, it could have been it just that their way it fell.
Okay.
Where she ran the checks.
Oh, I see. This is when they were paid, not
yes.
when they... Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I doubt that there's two phone bills. I don't think there are.
Are you looking up left and right?
No, up and down.
I think there was one month where we were late. Or we missed one payment, that's why we had those two.
Okay. That might be it, yeah. I seem to remember something like that.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to financial statements. These statements reflect activity through the end of August, or 16.6% through the new fiscal year. General fund revenues stand at a little bit more than 9.5% collected year to date compared to budgeted, while expenditures are at 16.26% compared to the budget. Even though there are some cost centers over the 16.6% benchmark, some of these are due to large one-time expenditures, expenses that are payables that will be reflected in last year's financial statements. There was a massive cement project in back of the high school that was paid in this fiscal year, but it's going to go back to last year. I'm just giving you that as an example. So, looking at overall spending within the general fund, nothing in here too concerned about. Revenues are another story, which I'll talk about here in a minute. Due to the changes we make to the operation of our HVAC systems, and this is just a heads up. When I say operation of the HVAC systems, that is running the fans nearly nonstop during the school day. And that is to effectively get an air exchange of 2 to 3 times per hour and help with the mitigation of the virus if it is brought into the school. So our electric bills are going to start creeping up. We anticipate our gas bills will as well increase during the winter months. And the electric bills on here don't necessarily reflect that because this is always paid in 1 month in arrears. So these payments were made in September for August. And obviously we didn't get started with school until near the end of August there.
The air handlers are going to be running evenings a bit too.
Yes.
So not just more during the school day, but at least a couple hours at night when they weren't done previously, and that's to do a purge of each of the buildings. So it's really two things, am I right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just to be aware, it's during the day more and then at night. So it could be noticeable.
Yes, it will be noticeable. So just be prepared. It's not going to be astronomical, but it is going to be noticeable. As a matter of fact, what Douglas was referring to, we also did, since we can do it with our systems that are set up on the brain, that we also added this feature to the high school that we can do a purge shortly after school and also a purge shortly before school starts in the morning automatically without having to, do it manually on a regular basis every day. So that's going to be done too. Next up. Enrollment. We budgeted for this school year for the four schools to be down 27 students from last year.
Net?
And
yes.
Net. Yes, yes. And unfortunately, the unofficial number, and I say unofficial, it's going to be really close to this, puts us down an additional 85 students over and above. My projection, and this does not include Legacy. If you include Legacy, they're down 35 students from what they built their budget on. For us, being down this additional 85 students, that's going to reduce our funding if we didn't have five-year averaging to help cushion the blow. It would have been almost $680,000 less in revenues if we didn't have the five-year averaging with. And granted, these are my calculations because they have to run our enrollment and the money available through the School Finance Act calculation. My best guesstimate right now is we're going to see a funding shortfall of about $350,000 from what I budgeted. So next up is the, I also want to give you some heads up here that we're going through the audit and we're getting close to the end of the audit, but the People Activity Fund, which pays for all of our extracurricular activities, we knew it was going to be, our ending fund balance was going to be down from last year's. Didn't know how significantly, I thought it might be significant, but We ended last year at $106,000, almost $106,700 in our funding, ending fund balance for People Activity Fund. I budgeted for a shortfall of $32,000 and change, and the reality is it's going to be down to $7,800 is all the ending fund balance is going to be for the People Activity Fund. I mean, that's what it's going to be down to. That's
down to that.
I'm sorry, I didn't articulate that my thoughts correctly on that. We're going to be down to going from $106,000 to $7,800, and that's the combination of fewer fees collected last year because we had to do a refunding for baseball, track, and that, and then we also paid coaches. There was no short, you know. All the coaches got compensated for what their contract said last year. So
so it went from People Activity Fund to Person Activity Fund.
Sure, if you want to look at it that way, that'd be fine. So this year, we're also going to be paying, I think, most of our coaches their full salary. However, we're also going to see a dramatic drop in gate revenue because we're not going to be able to have as much spectators in the stands for the football games, and who knows what's going to happen with basketball, volleyball, whatever there. So so we increased the transfer for this year's budget from $506,000 from the general fund to the People Activity Fund to subsidize those activities. From $506,000 increased to $74,000 to $580,000. I anticipate that we're probably going to have to increase that transfer again at the mid-year budget revision. So just kind of preparing you for this upcoming year.
Is the biggest hit out of that the coaches' salaries?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately also, we're having to see an increase in what we pay officials because they're years past, it was because they got a little tired of the berating of the spectators and that, and also the drive out here. And so now it's this year, in addition to that, we got the other maladies going on here. So there are some other increases that we're also going to have to account for.
Gotcha.
Let's see, moving on to food services. For this fund, we knew we were going to spend down our reserves again for food services. Again, we paid all of our kitchen staff full salaries through the end of the fiscal year/school year last year, and we lost sales revenue, and fortunately for this one, it's not nearly as bad as the spend down for the People Activity Fund, but it still went down from. The fund balance for the previous year was $145,000, and it's actually going to be $66,000. So we're dropping about $80,000 in the fund balance. So we might have to increase, we might not have to increase the transfer because I'm pretty sure you all know this, but the USDA has decided that they're going to pay for all students' lunches for the balance of this year. And so we're not collecting any, not fees, but any revenue for sales of lunches in the schools. Mm. USDA is picking up the tab on all of that. But that's cross country too, so it's not just us or Colorado.
Right.
They're doing that for everybody.
But you still got to pay the people, put some food together.
Well, we pay the people, but these are certain revenues we're going to be getting.
Sure.
And it's also increasing our participation rate in the lunchroom. More students are finding out about it, and families are finding out about it, and they're taking advantage of the lunches, free lunches. So hopefully we're not going to have to increase the transfer, but just be prepared. We might have to. I need to see what our revenues are going to be, how steady the revenues are going to be to offset salaries and food costs, because food costs are going up, as you could probably imagine. So we also have to anticipate for that. Good news. Like I said, we were nearing the end of the audit, the budget was built on about having a starting fund balance for the year that we're in at about $4.1 million. And we actually ended up with about $400,000 more than what we anticipated. So there's a little bit of lipstick right there for
thank you for a little bit of good news. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Should have led with that.
No wonder trying. Douglas always goes after you.
To put a cap on that.
Only took 3 years.
To put a cap on all this, I'm trying to prepare you for, you know,
for more bad news.
Well, yeah. Reality. This is not just this year's problem.
I know.
This is going to be a continuation. There's going to be the lingering effects for years. And not that it's going to make you feel bad any better, but everybody's going through it practically.
Yes.
Everybody, not just in the state, but throughout the nation.
Yeah.
So it's not a problem unique to our district, to our state, but it's still something we have to deal with. And I would like to, as much as possible, I know it's not going to be completely possible, but I'd like to minimize a further spend down. You know, this budget was built on spending down our reserves to try and cushion the blow and the shock to everybody's system here. We didn't reduce staff. We didn't include any furlough days. Other districts reduced staff. Other districts did furlough days. Our budget doesn't have any of that in here. But that's, you know, something that I don't want to come to that, you know, come to that at some, you know, but it might just have to. We might have to make some. When I might have to enter into some of our discussions as the year goes on. So,
where on this report is? Remember the $1 million that we got from the governor for the COVID? Where is that on this? That shows like how much money has been used for it or allocated already.
So. It is location code 600, but I'll get you.
I have 37 pages.
600, paragraph B, section C.
It's
so bold. Well, the location code, that's, okay, I got it. Page 13. Go to page 13, where it says general fund 600 centralized services. Go to the sixth line down, where you see a budget on the left-hand side of $225,000.
$225,646.
Uh-huh. Everybody there?
Yep.
That's for purchase services.
Are you on the average?
Okay.
Everybody, I'm sorry, on page 13?
Page 13, uh-huh.
Oh, I'm on page 13 of the whole document.
I did that too.
Okay, yeah.
I'm looking, I didn't see that number.
Page 13, top right hand.
Yep, I see that now. Yep, okay.
And right below that is 400,000.
Okay.
That is, those are the two budgets for that amount. Now, we're probably going to, well, not probably, but we're going to exceed that when we make some journal entries for some of our instructional staff. There's a little whatever we get it over $800,000 because we had to flow through nearly $200,000 to Legacy. So we're going to use some of that money for what's called making up instructional time from last year's instructional time from March through May. There's an increased time because the instructional time, as much as we try, like to not lose too much instructional time, there's still a loss of instructional time during those months. We are now at over 6 hours of face-to-face instructional time, so there is an increase from what we were doing back in the spring till now, and we can use some of that money to pay salaries and benefits for whatever money we didn't spend on hundreds of thousands of dollars in technology, which was all necessary and needed. But there is there is, we are going to be able to use some of that funding for that. But that's where the budget is for that coronavirus relief funds.
That's the expense side of it.
Yeah, and the revenue side.
But the $1 million that came from starting this past year, I mean the whole year was the $1 million, correct? Is that when?
Well, it's right. Kind of spread out over.
Yeah, we started spending it back basically April, May, and June when we knew we were going to have to, we were going to have remote learning for the rest of the year, cleaning supplies, masks, and things like that. We started spending a portion of it in the last fiscal year. All of the revenue that we collected, that $1 million, was reflected in last year's financial statements. This year, it's carried over, not as revenue, but in the reserves. And that's, we set aside that money in the reserves specifically for these expenses.
So then that raise for the substitutes that could come out of this as well, it's not something that we would probably do.
I don't know.
What we're doing in answer to that, those kinds of questions, is one calls the state. Can we allocate this grant money to, or it's not grant money, it's a grant
money.
To that expense. So I think that really everything that we're allocating that money
We're getting clarification.
And that's who we answer to, or who you answer to, is the state. They're the ones responsible for seeing how those funds are dispersed within the schools. Okay.
They're the ones who, in essence, set the rules, and therefore
got it.
The rules.
Got it. Okay.
And then guide us, because it's not really.
Because I knew
they're
it was
guided by the feds. Right.
Sure.
But they're the ones who set the Colorado rules.
So the state controller's office is the one basically kind of controlling the purse strings. And who CDE has to report to, but then I asked my contacts over at, I say my contacts, it's everybody's contacts, whoever, 178 school districts, contacts people at school finance within CDE, hey, this is the scenario, what are your thoughts, does it meet the criteria or not? So some of them are slam dunks.
Can you email that to me so I have documentation of that?
Don't I do. Oh, box. I've.
No, not you. I wasn't saying you. Right. From them to you. Yeah.
I do have my emails that I've contacted them just as my backup documentation.
Right. You need that nowadays. That's for sure.
Especially when they say, when I'm filling out my quarterly reports, I have to certify it, and I have a real qualms about it because I'm also having to certify for the charter school, and you have to kind of reasonably. Say that, they're spending their money accordingly like they're supposed to. But it does give me a little bit of heartburn because I have to say, they're spending it correctly.
Sure. So out of these $2 amounts, how much is this what we have left to spend, or is this what we
This
spend?
Is the number to the right of it is the what's been spent year to date. However, there are what are called encumbrances, outstanding encumbrances that we haven't paid the bills of probably $100,000 to $150,000 of outstanding bills that we haven't paid. And I don't know. Marty, do you think does that sound about right?
Well,
plus, this is also the end of September. No, end of August. So there's a lot of outstanding bills that are not reflected in this financial statement.
They're encumbered, right? Because most of them are tied to POs that haven't been paid yet.
Does that sound okay?
Bryce, what do you think?
Sure.
You can sit in the chair.
That's good.
So that's my news.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Awesome.
Could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The increase in the fund balance of 400. Offsets the decrease in per pupil funding of 350.
There's a wash.
So there's the good news and there's the bad news, and then there's all the other news. Right?
But when you
the student activity fund and all the those pieces.
Right.
And when you net it out, yeah, it's about a $50,000 upside, but most of that's already kind of spoken for with some of the other things that are going on.
And just as a, you know, a recognition of Ron and his work, and you know, he talks about the furlough days in other districts and what other just you know, cutting staff and so forth. Two comments about that. One of the reasons that they're doing that, generally put, is that they were, I don't know how to say this accurately, they were at a high spending rate coming into this.
Yes.
And so they had to make those cuts. Mm-hmm. Right? We weren't at that high spending rate, and that's one of the reasons we didn't have to make those cuts. Because you could say they were overextended when you look at multiple years in a way that we weren't overextended. And there's more detail on how they were overextended. For some of them, their salary schedules were so generous that they're hard to maintain over time. Another, with especially larger districts, is what you might call overstaffing. And so they, especially administrative staff, that we've stayed very lean, and that this balance that Ron just described to you is much better than some of the districts he was alluding to, meaning that they're in much worse shape and aren't able to say something's awash, and they're in much dire straits. So we're not in those dire straits because of the prudence in salaries, positions, et cetera, leading into this, and therefore are not, and then the budgeting process for this year are not in as bad a situation. And some of what we hear is multiples worse than what you're hearing tonight, and that's in large part because of Ron's approach.
Thank you for that, Ron. We appreciate it.
So, this is about as bad as he wants it to get.
Us too.
And that provides an incentive for him and to us to stay kind of even keeled in our finances.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you. Any questions? Anybody have any questions? Okay, let's move on to superintendent update. The clock's running.
Okay. I've kept you all very informed.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
What?
I'm happy to answer.
Carol.
That's good.
I don't have any questions.
Actually, I just want your opinion of how you felt, because I felt it was really good, and I know you were there, the football game went. How the fans behaved, the students behaved.
I thought that it went extremely
well. Yeah.
So, like, from two perspectives. One, if you don't know what's happened in other communities, and you just looked at it as an event, it was very well communicated, organized. There were no kind of problem issues. There were a few people that showed up that didn't have tickets, and that was respectfully and easily dealt with. The spectators all followed the protocols. It was extremely well organized in terms of where people sat, spacing, compliance with cooperation with the rules. The only thing that wasn't like letter perfect was the players on the sideline weren't, the guideline says 6 feet apart. They probably weren't even 3 feet apart, but they were moving around. In terms of our team, which isn't exactly what you're asking, but I thought the team did extremely well for how short kind of practice. They'd only been hitting for 9 days. I mean, they had very few penalties. The other team had 4 to 5 times as many penalties. They just had a couple of stronger, faster runners. And that's the only, I think that's the main reason that we didn't do better from the final score. But I was really proud of our team, our coaches. I thought they handled themselves extremely well. And every, in the marching band, the Palms, it was, I was just very proud, of our parents. So, and the school, especially, and John and Brett and Buzz, the coach, for all their work going into it.
So I would just like to give a shout out to the EZTV teacher. I cannot remember her name.
Michaela.
Yes. She did a fantastic job, and I happened to be in the press box helping spot and help Mike Boss, the announcer, and she was just all over the place communicating with her students, saying, hey, this camera's down, go to this one. And yeah, I kind of felt like I now have a feeling of what it's like to be in the NBC production booth. So she did a great job.
There was a lot of work, and the students helped with that and set it up. So it was just a great deal of collaboration among a bunch of different folks. You know, the school resource officer there working with the administration to deal with nothing serious by any means, but just people that didn't know what was going on. They saw some lights, they showed up.
Thank you. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay.
Anything else? No. Anything else, Douglas? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the update on football. Moving on, public comment. Do we have any public comment? Was anything emailed?
That was received.
Okay. So we will move on to the consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve items 9.1 through 9.6?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Director Benkendorf? Yes. Director Frumviller?
Yes.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Moving on, we have no action items, no discussion items. Next up is BOE planning. Our next board meeting is October 26th. Are y'all two here? Not here?
No.
You're not? You're not?
I'm here.
Should be here. Hopefully John will be here. Okay. So Kim, if you find out something, you're not going to be here.
Oh no, I'll
let us know, because we can't have a meeting unless the three of us are here. So
it's on the counter. I'll be here.
Okay.
You're and then also. One of the things that we'll be presenting to you then is the biannual enrollment update. So we'll have, you'll all see that. But Shelley's been working on that, and especially, you know, given the enrollment numbers, to see where the enrollment has shifted, how many are online versus in person, and that sort of thing. So,
Carol,
a bit more interest in that than
you. No, I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. We do have a new policy in that we've voted on and passed to allow electronic meetings. I'm just saying, if it does come down to being
That's
short.
True.
If we do come down to being short.
That's
right.
Good
point. Okay. I can.
But you two can't call in. Right?
I can come down the mountain if I have to. I can be on a call if something comes up to where.
I'm just worried about John. I know he's okay.
Understand, but I would need to know probably.
He's headed home right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would need to know Friday midday.
Okay.
Yes.
I leave Thursday, so if you could let me know.
Okay.
Down the
okay.
I can do that too.
Good deal. Good thinking. Forget about that. Because in the past, we could call in, but we still hadn't have three.
Have three, correct.
Now, right? That's a good point.
Okay.
And the features of habit, right?
Yes. Well, it's been many years.
Yes.
That way. Okay, so we got BOE planning. Next we have executive session. Can I get a motion to move into executive session for safety and security under CRS 24-6-402 4D for the discussion of matters specific to specialized details of security arrangements or investigations.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Director Benkendorf, yes. Director Frumville.
Yes.
Director Hines.
Aye.
Director Karcher.
Aye.
Should we take a break?
Yes, we're going to take about a 2-minute break to let everybody get up and move around for a second. And clearly.